And welcome back. It is now episode 5 of the Functional Nerds. That's a huge milestone, I think. And we are here again to talk about all the great stuff that interests us throughout the week. My name is Patrick Hester. I am an author, a podcaster now, a blogger, and a Twitter fanatic. And my partner in crime in this little endeavor is John Anilio. Say hello, John.
Hello. I am John Anilio. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy books and TV shows and movies and all that kind of stuff. And I am a podcaster as well, because I'm talking into a podcast microphone right now. So that makes me a podcaster.
That makes it official. Yes. Yeah. If you were talking into any other kind of microphone, it would not be official. It has to say podcasting on it.
Yeah, although the USB snowball, I think it's designed for podcasting, but I don't think it's called a podcasting microphone. But I think if you look for podcasting microphones, it will come up.
I believe you.
Yeah, yeah.
So, been a fun 4 episodes. Number 5 is going to be just as much fun. We've got a lot of things to talk about. Before we get started, did you got anything extra special going on?
I'm working on a new song. Things have slowed down on my blog. When I first started Sci-Fi Songs, like a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, I was putting, well, the very first month I put out a song each week.
Then I thought I was going to do
the Jonathan Coulton thing where I was going to do, you know, a song a week. Wow. And then I was like, well, that's not going to happen. Maybe every 2 weeks. And for quite a while, I did a new song every 2 weeks. That was sort of how I was going with it. And then it slowed down to about once a month. And now it's more like once I put the actual official album out, it slowed down to about every 6 weeks. Although, you know, I did like a rash of them at the end of 2009, where I put like 3 songs out within 4 weeks. So, you know, it all depends. But I am trying to get back into recording some stuff, and I have an old song that I'm working on. It's actually one of the songs that sort of led to doing Sci-Fi Songs. I wrote it after I read Quicksilver, which is a Neal Stephenson book. It's part of his Baroque trilogy.
Okay.
And Isaac Newton is one of the main characters in it. And so I'm ready. I wrote this song quite well before Sci-Fi Songs, about a year or two before I even started doing Sci-Fi Songs. And it's a song about Isaac Newton, and it's specifically about 1666 and how important of a year that is, which is kind of what the Baroque trilogy is about. But then I read all these biographies on Isaac Newton and realized that a lot of what Neal Stephenson wrote about was true, you know. 1666 is kind of an amazing year. A lot of really big things happened in the world then, and that's what the song's about. And so I finally recorded it. I recorded it about a week and a half ago, like my guitar and my vocals, but I haven't touched it since then. And today I actually started editing the vocals, and now I'll start adding other parts and stuff. It'll probably be a couple of weeks at least until that sees the light of day. But that's
gotcha.
What I'm on right now.
Okay. Well, what's amazing about that is that your progression with your blog is identical to my progression with my blog, because I was going to do the same thing. I was going to do a post every day. It was going to be interesting. People were going to come there and they were going to read it. And then it became really, really hard. And then it was a post a week. And now you're lucky if you get 2 a year.
Well, I think Twitter has kind of changed things in that way for people, because
yes.
You do have contact with people. Like when I first started blogging, you know, the blogs were sort of like Twitter. Like people commented on each other's blogs a little more frequently than I think they do now. And, you know, it was more of a community in that way. Now blog is sort of where you put your main content, whether it be, you know, writing or a song or a podcast or whatever. And then, you know, you kind of communicate through Twitter and or Facebook or whatever. And then when you have new content, you sort of point to it via the social networks and, you know, try to get people to check it out that way. But yeah, I don't, you know, one of the reasons why I stopped doing so much was because I have a pretty big catalog of songs right now. I mean, I think I have between the album and non-album songs and remixes and stuff like that. I mean, I think I have 30 different songs that people can download. So it's not like it's a fly-by-night operation. If people come by my blog, it's like, oh, he has 2 songs. That's cool. It's like, nah, they have 30s. Like, so if you're just coming to my blog, you have a lot to chew on when you get there. So I don't feel as compelled to like get stuff out as quickly. And also I've noticed since I've slowed down, I feel like the quality of the recordings has gone up significantly, you know, 'cause I just work on them longer. When I was doing like those song a week or every 2 weeks, I was really kind of rushing to get it out. And I feel like some of those not so much in songwriting, but in recording quality is not as good because I didn't spend as much time on them. I like bash them out in 2 weeks, you know. So
yeah, see, I don't have the patience to do recordings like that.
What, like where you take 6 weeks to?
No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
you're lucky if you get me. If you want to record something that I'm playing on the guitar, you better sit down now, press record, because as soon as I'm done with the song, it's done.
Yeah, I've done that way too. Like even on my album, there's a song called "Lonesome October Night," and that's a I put up two microphones, one on my guitar and one on my voice, and just did a bunch of takes and then just picked the best one and finished it there. that's kind of, I like doing that once in a while, but for the most part, I get very, I take a long time. I do a ton of takes and I edit them and I add a million parts and I do very elaborate arrangements. So that's what I like to do. And, you know, that's kind of what my music is. It's these elaborate arrangements. And I like that. So
there's a Christmas video and it's, I want to say it's like the first Christmas here in Denver. And my cousin and I, when we lived in California, all of it, we would have these big Christmases, these big Thanksgivings. Everybody would bring their guitar. There'd be tons of music going on. You know, my brother plays guitar. Her brother plays guitar. Both of her brothers do. Her dad plays guitar. Different people singing, different people. You know, I mean, it was really musical. Okay. And we hadn't had that for a really long time. So the first Christmas when we were all kind of regathered from California to Denver, we had this big party and we got together and we all played music. So there's this video of us sitting around playing music. But her husband, who is not musically inclined at all, was in charge of the camera. So every time, you know, he would put the camera on us and we would start to play a song. And just about the time you got to kind of like the good part of the song, he would stop recording and he would move on. Mm-hmm. So there's a video of us playing, you know, like half a song or a quarter of a song, or he'd catch the end of a song. And for some reason, you talking about all this recording stuff just kind of made me think of that because it's really funny. It's probably the only time anybody has actually tried to record me or my cousins and my brothers and stuff, playing, I only have one brother, but, playing music, and, it's completely crap.
Well, good. Well, anyway, let's talk about, what's in,
speaking of music.
Yes. That's a very, segue.
Now that I've bored John with my family story.
Well, why don't you give your spiel on what we're going to talk about this week?
Okay, I can do that. So, every week for the last few weeks, you and I have sat down here and we kind of get together and we talk about a lot of different things, including technology, you know, science fiction and fantasy, and music. And I think you and I love music. We love technology, so it only kind of made sense this week to kind of push them together and talk about them. How you get your music today and how you listen to your music can be just as polarizing a conversation for some people as politics, religion, or barbecue. And barbecue is huge. There's only certain kinds of food that can be called barbecue. Don't get me started. There are a lot of different ways to buy music now, a lot of different ways to find music, to share it, and to listen to it. The music industry, who started it all, really wants us to just purchase the physical CDs. And that's because they invest a lot of time and money into the CD, into the marketing. You know, that's how they recoup their costs. Unfortunately, the artist doesn't get a lot of that money. Retailers like Apple and Amazon, they would prefer, and they think it's just fine for us to download music digitally because they don't have to have any inventory, and no inventory means no overhead, which means they can make more money. The music industry hates that idea, and they hate that whole business model because they don't want us buying just the song that we want, which is really what digital music does for us. They want us buying the whole CD, the whole album, whether there's, you know, 10 sucky songs and one really great song, or 5 great songs and 4 sucky songs. They want us to buy the whole dang thing. So the juggernaut in all of this is iTunes. The music industry didn't really think iTunes was going to do anything. You know, everybody had tried before, come up with different kind of models. So no one had come up with a viable model, though, not for online digital distribution. So when Apple came knocking, the music industry signed up, and Apple said, we're going to sell them for 99 cents a song. And they said, sure, that's fine, because they didn't really think anything was going to happen. And really, they just thought, you know, any money that we make is going to be better than what we're doing right now, which is nothing. So obviously, Apple had some things figured out. And when they tied iTunes to their iPod, really that created a boom heard around the world. But other companies, they still tried to create different kinds of models, you know, especially since the music industry did not like the 99-cent model once it took off and exploded. Microsoft created the Zune. They also created the Zune Marketplace, where you could pay a monthly subscription. And for that subscription, you could access as much music as you wanted. But the catch was, if you canceled your subscription, the music went away. So it wasn't really like buying the music. You were just sort of renting it. But now that service is tied to the Xbox Live account. So if you have the Zune Marketplace account and you have the Xbox Live account, you can bring TV, movies, music, all that kind of stuff to your Xbox. And I don't know if that's worth it or not. I guess if you have your Xbox going through your surround sound system and you have all that cool stuff going on, then that's probably a good way to go. But today, you know, you can buy CDs, you can download MP3s from Amazon, you can download AACs from iTunes, you can listen to streaming audio from your local radio stations. They do that over the net, or from sites like Pandora and Last.fm that will even offer you suggestions of new music based on what you already are listening to and what you're already liking. So the choices really are seemingly endless for how to get your music. And the question today is, how do you choose what works best for you? John?
Oh, well, I use a combination of things. You know, I used to, like everybody else, I had CDs, although I go back to cassettes and stuff too. But since the iPod era, I've had my iPod for, I don't know, 6 years or something like that, 5 or 6 years. And
that's right. You told me once before that you had the 10-pound iPad or iPod.
Yeah, I have the, it's not a first gen one. I have one. I think they were calling it the iPod Photo at the time, because you could put pictures on it, but mine doesn't do video and it's 20 gigabytes of storage. But so I've had it for a pretty long time. And I started by just ripping my own CDs, and I used to buy from the iTunes store somewhat regularly. Maybe I bought like an album a month or so. But I do two things to get music. I actually get a lot of music from the library, which,
really?
You know, yeah, I actually do. Well, because the library is in my county, you can borrow from any library in the county and they'll just deliver it to yours. And although I think the libraries are starting to lose a lot of funding now, so I've noticed over the past year or so they don't get as much as they used to, but for a time they really got a lot of stuff. So I get a lot of music from the library. You know, which you could probably question the legality of that in terms of like ripping CDs from the library.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess the way that I look at it is, I look at it from two ways in terms of ripping CDs from the library. Number one, you know, I am paying tax dollars, which is buying those CDs, number one. And number two, I also feel like it's a discovery mechanism, you know, because I will take lots of stuff out that I know I would never have purchased, but I get it to see if I like it. And there has been a couple of things that I've taken out of the library that I've loved and then have gone on to buy the rest of said artist album. There's a group called Tegan and Sarah. They're twin sisters, and they're kind of like folk, but kind of punky and poppy and stuff too. And they are a band, from looking at them, I would have never purchased one of their albums. It just wasn't something that I would have found all that appealing. Even seeing them live, I don't know if a live performance would have really sold me on them, like if I saw them on TV, but I got one of their albums from the library, and after listening to it for a while, I loved it and have purchased like three of their albums since then. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, in the end, I mean, it's kind of like anything else. You give some stuff away, you buy stuff. But that's one way. But really, the way that I get music nowadays primarily is through a company called eMusic. Now, have you heard of eMusic before? Because I've mentioned them a couple times in the podcast before, but I don't know.
Only through you. And I'm just as a side note, I'm wondering, is Tegan her real name?
It's T-E-G-A-N. Because I think that's their real names.
If it is, Tegan and Sarah?
Yeah.
I wonder if their parents were like massive Doctor Who fans and decided just to torture their kids by naming them after companions.
Oh, who knows? I don't know. They're kind of an interesting story though. So I'll look it up. I'll see. Maybe for next time we can.
I'm just curious. Yeah. I knew a guy who named all his daughters after characters in Lord of the Rings, and I was just like, okay.
Yeah. No, Tegan and Sarah, they're twin sisters. Hmm. They're okay. Like 30 years old or something now. So possibly.
Anyway, eMusic, I have never checked it out. I only know of it through you and what you've said about it.
Well, yeah, eMusic is a subscription service, but it's not like some of the other subscription ones out there, because you pay the plan that I have, you pay $11.99 a month, and I'm sort of grandfathered into the old plan because I pay $11.99 a month and I get 30 downloads a month for that. Now I think it's only 24. Download. So essentially you pay $12 and get two albums a month. So you get, $6 an album, I guess, but I get a little more because I had an older plan that they sort of, because I've been with them for a pretty long time, they kind of grandfathered me in.
Sure.
But you get the MP3s and they're pretty high quality. I think they're 256 or three something or whatever. So they're pretty high quality MP3s. And you just get to keep them. So even if I canceled my eMusic subscription tomorrow, like I keep everything that I've purchased from them.
Okay,
so it's
that's
not
cool.
Like a rental. Yeah, so it's like you're subscribing to buy and you just pick what you buy. Their catalog has gotten a lot bigger over the past 6 months. They were very much like an independent. They used to bill themselves as sort of the indie music subscription service, and you know their whole marketing was like discover great new stuff, and that was sort of their trip. But now they have some deals with some of the majors now. They don't have everything though. That's
sure.
That's the only problem is that
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, I think iTunes is the closest. I think iTunes pretty much has most stuff, but.
Find me a Beatles song on iTunes.
Yeah, I guess
exception. Was it Zeppelin isn't on there yet, or is it AC/DC?
No, I think Zeppelin's on there. AC/DC, I don't think is.
I don't think AC/DC's on there.
But yeah. that's an individual band thing. That's not
sure.
Because they're so big, they have that control. But anyway, I like eMusic a lot because I'm cheap and I like sort of getting albums for like $5 or $6 instead. What I notice I use it for, I have probably purchased half of what I've purchased through eMusic has been things that I had on cassette, 15 years ago that, just went the way of, the garbage because I can't do anything with them. So I've replaced a lot of old things that I've had. So, sort of karmically, I don't mind sort of ripping stuff from the library because I'm like, well, I bought this album twice now, or I bought this album three times now, but they do have a lot of good indie stuff too, and so that's sort of my primary.
I bought Star Wars five times.
Exactly, but the thing is with eMusic, I recommend it to people, but what I would do is go to their site, which I think is just eMusic.com, and search around for stuff that you like. See if they have enough stuff that you like where paying a $12 subscription would be worth it, because if your tastes tend to be pretty mainstream, it might not be the best thing for you because they're getting more and more now. Like I know like the big thing last week, I think whatever they signed a deal with whatever label where now they have The Doors. So that's like that was like a big thing for them.
That is, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, they have some pretty major bands on there now, because I think that Warner Brothers signed, because there's really only like four major record companies now, because all of them bought all the smaller ones. So
right.
Even signing one major record label is a is a ton of artists, because they're, that's one major is probably like 200 smaller record labels now or something. So they have a pretty big catalog now. So, you know, go and check it out. See if they have the kind of, some kinds of stuff they like, search for stuff. And, you know, I think you can cancel at any time. So if you don't like it, you know, you can get rid of it. But I like it. And then they have like a little sort of downloader thing where, you know, you push one download button and then it'll import it right into iTunes for you. So that's what I use, and I like it. So that's my primary way of getting music. How about you? What do you use to get music mostly?
I do all sorts of things. You know, you talk about having cassette tapes, and what just brought to my mind was something I had on cassette wasn't available for the longest time, either as a CD or as a digital. And that was the Traveling Wilburys.
Yes. Yeah.
And they finally released that, and I managed to grab it. But anyway,
just to cut you off real quick.
Yeah.
With the Traveling Wilburys, there's a very cool cover. Well, I think it's a cool cover, especially if you like any sort of this sort of indie rock kind of stuff, Handle Me With Care. It's on, an album by a singer. Her name is Jenny Lewis.
I think I've heard it.
Yeah, and she's in a band called Rilo Kiley, and it is her. It's sort of like the sort of newer indie rock supergroup, because it's her, this guy M. Ward, Connor Oberst, who has a group called Bright Eyes, and Benjamin Gibbard, who is the singer from Death Cab for Cutie. So these are all like very big, like indie rock names, and so they're all singing on that song, and it's kind of cool because, you know, Connor Oberst sort of gets a lot of like Dylan comparisons, because he writes these very sort of Dylan-esque lyrics, and he has kind of a Dylan voice, in the way that he doesn't have a great voice, but he's got a voice with character, and he writes these very meaningful lyrics. So it's funny because he's singing like sort of the Dylanish parts there,
and so, you know, if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, the Traveling Wilburys, that was Bob Dylan, George Harrison, Mark Lind.
Jeff Lynne
from ELO, Tom Petty, and wasn't there somebody else?
Did you say Roy Orbison yet?
Roy Orbison, thank you.
Yeah.
I knew there was somebody else. Mrs. Roy Orbison was also on there. That's an urban legend.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah, okay. So they kind of formed this group late 80s, I want to say.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And, you know, all these guys who've had, you know, huge amounts of success on their own, you would never expect them to kind of get together and form a band and do a bunch of songs, and yet they did. I think they actually did two albums.
They did.
Volume 1, Volume 2, even after Orbison died. Mm-hmm. I thought it was great music. I really did. I loved it. So it's interesting that you know, a group of younger folks got together now and kind of covered that song together.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was a couple years ago now. It's probably like going back like 3 or 4 years ago. But so those all of those acts are bigger now than they were 3 or 4 years ago. M. Ward and Connor Oberst have a side project with the guy from My Morning Jacket called The Monsters of Folk, which is sort of like supposed to be a play on the, you know, if you remember years ago, there was the Monsters of Rock concert tour, where it was like, you know, Dokken and Metallica and all that kind of stuff. So I think they were calling that little side project the Monsters of Folk as a joke. And then they didn't come up with another name. So that's the album. But that's a pretty cool album too. But
well, how I find music is kind of fun. I've done all sorts of different things throughout the years. My first experience with any sort of streaming radio was when I took a job in this building, and I would always take a radio to work with me, and the radio could not get a signal inside the building, and I didn't have an iPod, and so I just started, you know, I didn't even have iTunes. I think I was using Windows Media Player.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of went down the radio station list to see, you know, what was streaming, and I started listening to Virgin Radio out of the BBC, out of Britain. It's not the BBC, but you know what I mean. It's Virgin Radio UK, and started listening to that. And then it was kind of poppy, and it would kind of expose me to music that I didn't normally listen to. And so I kind of started listening to streaming radio. Eventually that led to Pandora. And Pandora was based on the Music Genome Project. And
yes.
Pandora is sort of the public-facing website of that project.
Yes.
And what they did was they analyzed songs to kind of identify patterns and what they call genes in music. And so if you liked this song, they would compare that pattern to the database and then find you another song that you might like based off of similarities between them.
Yeah, I actually use Pandora as well.
I liked it a lot better before they got sued.
What happened after they got sued? I don't know too much about it. Did things change when they got sued?
Yeah, what happened was the music industry sued them for higher royalties than what they were paying.
Oh, I remember
and
that.
And that caused them to, A, have to take on ads, and B, limit how much music you can listen to in a week.
Yeah, I've only used Pandora probably since that's sued, so I know there are some limitations on it. I do like that about Pandora, though. I use it a little bit. I stream it sometimes on the computer. I also, as I mentioned previously, I have a Roku player.
Right.
And you can stream Pandora through the Roku player.
Mm-hmm.
So I will use – that's probably the only time I use it now is sometimes if I'm reading in the living room or something, or if I'm just – kind of at the house alone or something, I'll put on Pandora through the Roku player. And it's a pretty nice interface on the Roku player. But I do like that it's – I heard a few interviews with Tim Westergren, who's the head of Pandora, and he talked extensively about the Music Genome Project and how they have just a bunch of musicians listening to all this stuff and have for like a decade. Like the Music Genome Project's been going on for a pretty long time.
Yeah, yeah, it has.
You know, so they've been working on this for quite a while, and you know they have actual musicians, you know, tagging it on real musical things, and I do like that about it because when you come up with something, you know, you get a lot of different things, a lot of different artists that sometimes you maybe wouldn't have even necessarily put together because maybe they weren't marketed similarly. You know, a few weeks back I talked about King's X and. You know, so I have my King's X station on Pandora, and they throw up a lot of Alice in Chains when you put King's X. And I never really cared much for Alice in Chains, and Alice in Chains and King's X were not marketed together at the same time. But when you analyze them musically, there are a lot of similarities between Alice in Chains and King's X. So it makes sense. Yeah, because there's like the down-tuned sort of chunky metal-ish guitars, and there's the vocal harmonies. Now, the King's X has more of a three-part Beatles kind of thing going. Alice in Chains had like a lot of two-part harmonies. So, you know, so if you go harmony vocals, heavy guitars, all right, that makes sense musically, you know? Mm-hmm. I like that about Rhapsody a lot, that it's pure music and not marketing.
Pandora,
that's right, sorry. Yeah, I think I just saw Rhapsody in the show notes here, but so I went to that. But I do like that a lot. I mean, one time on my blog, I was talking because that's the way I kind of look at music. I mean, I don't like to be too pretentious about this with music, but I am very much like you should be open if you like music. It serves to be open about what you listen to.
And, sure.
You know, don't be closed off just because it's not marketed at you. Because I think a while back when I was doing sort of my solo podcast and I would talk about whatever top five artists I was listening to, and I mentioned some emo band or something that I was listening to, and somebody had wrote in the comments like, how can you listen to emo? It's terrible. They're just whining all the time. And what I had written back in the comments and the person like had an open mind and were like, oh, I didn't think about it that way. I just said like, look, they're good melodies and they're heavy guitars. Like I like heavy guitars and I like good melodies. So what's the difference? Like, yeah, you know, maybe you don't love the lyrics and that's fine. You don't have to like it, but you know, I do love that Pandora analyzes it in that way. The only problem I have with Pandora is it seems kind of limited with the amount of different artists. So if you have that King's X station, it seems like, all right, we're going to pick these five artists and throw them in there with it. And you know, you're going to hear the same. It seems like there's a lot of repetition within it, you know, within a station, or at least the times that I've used it. I would like to see a little more variety within that.
Wow.
Now, do you, when you use iTunes, I'm assuming you use iTunes.
I do. And I mean, the other thing that I do that's a little bit different, than I buy a lot of soundtracks.
Right.
And I do that because they have mixes of different artists. And so that kind of exposes me to other music.
Sure.
And I find that that's an easy way to kind of jump in and say, oh, you know, here's Colin Hay, or, oh, here's this guy, or there's this, you know, that I never listened to before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you had I do use iTunes. What's your question?
Oh, I was wondering what I'm a bit obsessive about, sort of cataloging my music and getting new music on my iPod all the time. I sort of prune my iTunes, you know, catalog every night for a little while. It's sort of, you know, like a relaxing end of the evening thing that I do, where I sit there for like 20 minutes or so. Some nights more than others, but you know, I mean, I think I have something like 60 gigabytes of music on my hard drive or something. So it's quite a bit. Do you use smart playlists on iTunes at all?
No.
No, smart playlists are pretty cool, and I didn't use them for the first couple of years that I had an iPod, and it's kind of a way, if you have a big catalog of stuff, it's like, well, how do you, I mean, yeah, you can physically just like look through your stuff, but if you have 60 gigabytes like I do, you can't just like look through all that every night. It's too much, you know? So I set up these smart playlists. Because my iPod is only 20 gigabytes, I had long since blown past being able to carry all my stuff on my iPod. But I want to have new stuff on there every day. So I have three or four different smart, and I have some that I know I don't want to listen to this album, so I'll copy that whole album onto the iPod for that day. But what I also do is, with smart playlists, you could set all of these different, criteria for them to pick. So I have one that is, you know, unloved lately. I have it listed. So I have it where, you know, okay, pick songs that I haven't played in 3 months.
I do that differently.
Okay.
I do similar things to what you're talking about, but I just have a different way of doing it. I don't do smart playlists. What I end up doing is going and adding the play column.
Okay.
And I sort by the play column,
mm-hmm.
but I start at the small end and just start playing stuff.
Okay. Yeah. That's a similar way to do it. What I do is, but I have my smart playlists have about 10 different criteria on it. Cause what I'll do is something that hasn't been played in 3 months. So, and then I have a couple different ones where it's like, all right. And one that has more than 5 play counts. Cause if it has more than 5 plays, that means I like it. Because I've listened to it 5 times already, but sure. I haven't listened to it in a while. And then I have, and don't put anything that has this as a genre. So I have like a lot of soundtrack music, instrumental music, but I don't want them going on these playlists because when I'm in the car, as much as I love Bear McCreary, I don't want to hear, you know, an orchestral piece, you know, driving to work. That's not what I want to listen to it. So
even if it's like Apocalypse.
Yeah, I don't like listening to instrumental music in the car. I like listening to that while I'm reading or something, but not when I'm in the car. I want some vocal music in the car. So, I have all these different playlists for that, and then I just refresh them every night. You know, yeah, I like to have a lot of different music every day, and I only have maybe 300 or so songs on my iPod at any given time that are in sort of this shuffling thing. Because then what I do is I have these 4 or 5 playlists that then when I hit shuffle songs, it's about 300 songs, and it's, you know, 200 of those are different every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I have good stuff on there. And then a lot of times something will come up and it'll be like, oh yeah, I haven't listened to this in a while. And then that night I'll go and I'll put that whole album on my iPod. So I find it's a way to like stay in touch with all of the different music that you have, right. on your, cause like I said, I have such a big, catalog of music, you know, there would be stuff that would just be neglected for a real long time.
Sure,
and
sure.
I found I was getting to the point where I was getting bored. I wasn't even like listening to a lot of music in the car really. Cause I'm just like, oh, I've heard all this stuff a million times, but it's all different stuff every day. So I found by doing the smart playlist, which I guess I started doing that maybe a year or two ago, it's really like revitalized the way that I listen to music. So it's, you know, if you're obsessive about music like I am, it's kind of a good way to go about it.
I have not used them now, but I'm thinking about it based on what you've just said. I will admit this, John. You are a bigger music nerd than I am.
Well, that's the one thing that I maybe beat you on in the nerd department. So
because that's huge. I mean, I've got 40 gig, I think, on this computer of music. I do have some other music on a backup drive.
Okay.
And the only reason it's not on here is because sometimes it can be a pain to kind of merge your iTunes libraries from separate computers.
Sure.
So I just haven't done that. I have the iPhone, so I take that with me to work every day. I used to listen to, I had what I called my work music, which was I took a couple of DVDs worth of music in and I put it on my work computer and would listen to it through the speakers. But then they moved me from my nice quiet little corner where no one else was around and I could listen to my music and do my job over to a very noisy cubicle area where I've got neighbors, and so I can't do that anymore. So now I listen with my earbuds, and I just have it on my iPhone. But I just typically, I have what I call my iPhone playlist, and I just dump music on there, and then I shuffle it.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way of doing it.
And so. sometimes I'll grab, you know, I'll just listen to albums. Like the other day, I was really in the mood to listen to Sgt. Pepper. So I made sure I had Sgt. Pepper on there, and I just listened to that, you know, from beginning to end. So it just all depends on now I'm terrible at finding new music a lot of times. And when people recommend stuff to me, I almost have the attitude of screw you. Don't tell me what to listen to, which is kind of counterproductive.
Sure.
Because, you know, people have good taste and they're trying to share that good taste with me. Mm-hmm. But occasionally I will get in a, I want to say like a musical ravenous mode, just like I'll get into a gosh, I really need some new books kind of mode. And I will go down, typically to like a used music store. We have several here, in Denver, Second Spin, that's kind of those kind of places. Anyway, I'll go there and I'll just kind of go through and see what they've got, you know, and pick up $5 and $6 CDs from the used CDs and take them home. And usually I'll try to get things with lots of different artists on it again so I can get good mixes and just kind of expose myself to a bunch of new music and then go from there. Not too long ago, I was bored with my music and I needed something different. And I just went online and I just started searching for, you know, different kinds of music and looking on YouTube and going here and going there. And I found, you know, like, Lisa Liu, I think is her name. And then through her, I found another guy. And then through that guy, I found Jason Mraz. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that this guy was on the radio and had like, you know, his songs playing every other hour. And I just picked up his music and started listening to it. And I thought, oh, this guy's kind of good. You know, and here I am. I'm completely oblivious to the fact that he's got this, you know the song.
Yeah, he had another hit from quite a few years ago from like...
Yeah, he had like a dance hit. Yeah.
Well, he had one called The Remedy, which was a pretty big hit. That's going back a good 6-7 years now. That was a while ago. His first album was big, and that song was a big hit. Then he put out a second album that didn't do too much. And then his third album, I think it was his third, it might have been his fourth even, that had like a big surprise hit, you know, that it was sort of like, all right, well, he had one hit, and now he's going to kind of be kind of independent now. But then he sort of had another hit on the top of that. One, if you're looking for a place to find good music recommendations, there are a couple of places that I go to. I mean, my ears are always open, and I'm always sort of looking around for it because I am a big music nerd. But a couple of places that you might want to check out, and some people who like our podcast might want to check out, because it's sort of more, I guess, intellectual about the way it goes about music, but. Paste Magazine is a very good place for music recommendations, and they have a print magazine that you can find in any Borders or Barnes & Noble or whatever. And if you go, I think it's Pace.com or it might be PaceMagazine.com. They have a really good, you know, daily blog where they, you know, have like 10 blog posts a day about different bands and sort of hews towards a mix of indie rock and folk and maybe even some electronic music. They're pretty broad. I mean, they'll even have some hip hop and stuff too. But I guess their wheelhouse is sort of that indie rock folk kind of stuff. But definitely very, because their magazine is very broad, not broad, but just in addition to music. They're mostly music focused, but in the magazine, they actually do film reviews and book reviews as well. So they're just sort of, they're very artsy. Very like bohemian almost.
I'm not a hip hop guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's not where I will go looking for music. But who's the kid that you linked that did the Doctor Who song?
Oh, Dale Chase is his name.
Dale Chase.
Yeah.
Excellent, Dale, excellent song. I really enjoyed it.
He actually, yeah, if you go to his site, he's got a set. He does a bunch of tunes like that. He had a kind of a big hit on Twitter a couple months back called Coder Girl. And it was all about, you know, a girl that he had a crush on that was like a computer coder. Way nerdy in terms of like I didn't understand half of it because I'm not a coder, so I didn't really understand half of the lyrics. But he's really cool. He does a lot of stuff. He, I think, would be part of what's called nerdcore. And I don't know if you know – I've heard that term before. You heard that term? Nerdcore is a type of hip-hop. And I'm not a big hip-hop fan myself, but nerdcore is exactly what you would think it is. It is hip-hop about – nerd culture, about coding and gaming and some science fiction and stuff. And someone who linked to this podcast, his name is Z. He does the Hipster Please podcast and he does a blog. And I think you probably saw that. He is a big nerdcore guy and supporter. He's played a lot of my music too. But I found out about Dale through Z. And,
well, it's a good find. Very good find.
Yeah, no, and there's do a little search on nerdcore. There's a guy named MC Frontalot. That's probably the biggest name in nerdcore, or one of the bigger names, and his songs are all like that too. But very interesting. Even if you don't like hip hop, like you said, it's good because it's just the lyrics are about stuff that you can relate to, about we can relate to. So even if you're a person that maybe wouldn't find yourself enjoying that style, you probably would enjoy it. But Dale's real cool, and he and I are actually going to be collaborating on something. We kind of have been, you know, kind of talking back and forth through Twitter, and I had a song idea because I thought it would be cool to do something where, you know, he did sort of his rhymes over one part and then I would have like a chorus. So I wrote a chorus part and I gave him what I thought would be some good stuff to sort of rap over. And so he's working on his rap end of it now. I have no idea if he's going to, if and when it's going to see the light of day. But once he sends stuff back, then I'll record my bit. So you might have like a sort of a hip hop, sci-fi songs mashup coming your way soon. So, and so, I will tell you what it's about. But I want to hold off until it looks more solid that it's actually going to happen.
Let's take a quick listen to Dale Chase and Who's Your Doctor?
Companion I've adored, rest assured, you're never bored with a Time Lord. Lost Rose cruise through a space-time rift. Ran with adventurous Sarah Jane Smith. But moving like that, you get the key to the TARDIS. You're doing the mech, yeah, I bet. But the last thing I wanna see tonight's a Dalek. I swear them dudes got a one-track mind with that exterminator buzz kill every time. Play it like Asterix, take it light. Before these Suntarans over here start a fight. Man, I just came to feel the vibe and regenerate. Okay, I brought the future you for a double date. And don't need a transmat beam to elevate. Both hearts beating for you.
Dale, great nerdcore hip-hop artist. I would say check out, just type in nerdcore and see if you find some stuff. But check out Dale specifically. And hopefully you'll see a collaboration between the two of us coming up in the next month or 2 months. I don't know. It depends. But hopefully
awesome.
You'll see something.
Awesome. Okay, so I think we should move on. We got a couple other things to talk about. I did want to ask you about Stargate Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Last week's episode, Divided. Really good.
Yes, agreed. Agreed.
Except I was cursing at the screen and in Twitter when the lieutenant and the airman get trapped downstairs with everybody, and the lady walks up and she's like, you know, what are you going to do? I'm shouting, shoot her in the head! Watch them back down! All you have to do is shoot her in the head, and all the rest of them will go, oops, sorry, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess they want to try to keep peace on this ship. I guess that was the whole, but I thought it was another really good episode, and really again points to the quality of, you know, the writing and the effects, and I think it's like really hitting its stride right now. Because I remember SGU was kind of, you know, criticized early on the first couple of episodes, you know, and I remember, I don't know if it was I forget which one of the show creators or the showrunner or whoever was kind of like, because I don't know which website was kind of blasting them, and they were just kind of like, wow, you know, we're only three episodes in, like, you know, we're trying to
give
build
us
something.
A shot. Yeah.
Yeah, like give us some time. Like, you guys are usually a little bit better about this, you know. Get, and I think this is like just like now showing it's like, all right, like
it's you know what it is? It's different from the previous two shows.
Yes.
And so what you've got going is the same thing as with Next Generation versus Star Trek. You've got the people who so loved the other shows that, you know, any departure from that formula just pisses them off and they can't take it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I watched it and I thought, you know what? They're taking it kind of far away. I don't even remember what I said at the time. I could probably find a blog post. I don't know if I liked it or not, but I like it now. You know, they have taken it in a different direction. Now the question is, and I know this doesn't necessarily pertain to you because you are a Hulu guy,
mm-hmm.
but the question now is, will people watch Stargate Universe on Tuesdays?
Oh, they're moving it to Tuesdays. I didn't know that.
It just broke today on Airlock Alpha.com.
Okay.
That the channel formerly known as Sci-Fi.
Oh, I'm going to stop you there. Okay. You got to let that go, Patrick. You got to let the channel formerly know. You got, it's not, they're not going to change. I was thinking when I was listening to our episode last week, I'm like Patrick's got to let that go. Just let it out. You know, it's funny though. The one thing I will say about this, the sci-fi thing, I know their whole like rebranding thing was that they wanted to move beyond.
It pisses me off.
I understand, and you know, the thing is that what's really kind of, you know, funny about it, and I can understand why you still hold that position. It's that I don't think it did anything. It's still called sci-fi. People still think of it as the sci-fi channel. Yeah. So
it's,
I mean.
Sci-fi.
It was kind of pointless, but it's fine. Like, I just see it and it's whatever. It doesn't bother me. But you got to let it go.
I'm not letting it go. Nope. I'm holding the grudge.
Just call it Prince anyway, from now on. How about that? The Prince channel.
The Symbol channel.
Yeah.
They bought another wrestling show.
Oh, see, now I'm pissed off.
And they're gonna they're going to put Friday Night SmackDown on Friday nights. And in order to do that, they have to move all their sci-fi programs to another night. So they're going to move them all to Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. What's on, you know, I don't really watch a lot of TV as it's airing. I do watch much of it on Hulu or much later on like Netflix or something. What's on Tuesdays? Like, what are the big shows that are on Tuesdays?
What is on Tuesday nights?
Is Lost
right
on Tuesdays?
Yes, Lost is on, but of course it's going away. Okay. So Lost and V.
Okay, V is Tuesdays too.
Are on
okay.
Tuesday nights. Glee is on, I think, Tuesday nights now. When it comes back. There's probably, is there a vampire show or something on CW? Is
probably.
Tuesday nights?
I don't know.
Something like that. So, I mean, there's definitely going to be more. And reading here on Airlock Alpha, they're saying NCIS and Grey's Anatomy are going to be on Tuesday nights.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how much. Well, I mean, I guess it still does matter quite a bit when your time slot is. I mean, part of me feels like, you know, between people's TiVos and DVRs and Hulu and everything else, it doesn't matter when a show airs. I think it still does. I think, you know,
well,
we're kind of more of a tech focused sort of people, so we know how to use Hulu and DVRs and that kind of thing.
Well,
but DVRs
are
pretty popular though, so I think a lot of people still do that.
But yeah. Here's a question for you though. Okay, Battlestar Galactica ended up appealing not only, you know, to the nerd guy, but to his girlfriend, his wife, you know, and the nerd girls out there. So they ended up watching it together. Does Stargate Universe have that kind of appeal? Because if not, you're going to have, you know, one person in the family wants to watch American Idol, which I think is also on Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I want to watch American Idol and I want to record NCIS. Well, now what are you going to do?
Yeah, it seems a little foolish. It seems like they had Friday as a, you know, because...
Well, it's been Sci-Friday forever.
Yeah, it seems... I think that's... I don't necessarily think that's a great idea to move it away from that, because it's like you might have much less competition. And like you said, the hardcore people are going to watch it no matter what. But, you know, like my wife is not a science fiction fan at all, but, you know, she will occasionally watch something with me and... being on Friday would be a much greater chance of that happening than, you know, during the week, probably, you know. So, yeah, it seems a little foolhardy, but, you know.
Well, it's all part of their plan to change their whole brand identity. Still think I should let it go?
Well, I think in your mind you can let it go, but I don't know if you're right. Yeah.
I've actually been waiting for you to get me.
Yeah.
Because you said you were going to get me at some point, and so you got me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Universe, great show. But, yeah, they're moving everything. So Caprica, Sanctuary, all that stuff's going to end up being on Tuesday nights, which I don't know. We'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I wish, you know, it's a problem I have with G4, too. I don't know if you watch anything on G4.
I used to. I used to TiVo stuff on there. But then it just started filling up my TiVo and I can never catch up. So I stopped.
Yeah. I like a lot of the G4 shows. I like Attack of the Show and I like Web Soup, which is essentially The Soup, but more web video focused. I really like both those shows a lot.
I used to watch The Olivia Munn Show.
Was it called The Olivia Munn Show or was it when she was just on Attack of the Show? Or are you just referring to Attack of the Show as The Olivia Munn Show?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I love both those shows. And actually, speaking of, now those are like very geek focused.
Yes, they are.
But speaking, getting back to what I was just saying about, you know, someone who's not a geek watching it, if I watch one of those and my wife happens to be in the room, she'll watch those with me because they're funny, you know, and because they're, you know, they're well done. And like, you know, Chris Hardwick, who does, The Web Soup is really funny, and so those you can get like kind of a spillover. But what annoys me about G4 is that so they'll show those, and then they'll show Cops and Cheaters, and I have no interest in those.
Right.
And I mean, I guess it's like my guess is that they probably get higher ratings for Cops and for Cheaters than they do for Attack of the Show. I don't know that for a fact. I'm just guessing.
Welcome to basic cable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what it is. People flipping around. People is probably more likely to watch a show like Cops. But it annoys me. It's like I'd rather just see them. I'd rather them just like re-show Attack of the Show more times, you know, because I don't always catch it when it comes on. And I don't go out of my way. I mean, I'm sure you could probably watch that somewhere online, I guess, too. But I don't go out of my way to watch that one. I'll watch that if it's on.
Right.
So
I used to record it the second showing of it late at night.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I haven't done that in a really long time.
Yeah, they're good. They're good and I like them, but I wish, you know, so it's the same problem with the Sci-Fi Channel is that now they have all this other stuff that's not sci-fi.
Right.
And, you know, and it's okay. Like, so they have like all the ghost shows, which I don't like those. My wife actually loves those shows. She'll watch those. But you know what? You can make an argument that the ghost shows are kind of relevant to the Sci-Fi Channel. You sort of.
Sure.
But like the wrestling, come on. I mean, that has nothing to do with anything.
Well, and to be honest with you, I think they're really kind of tying some of their reality shows together with their other shows. If you're talking about Syfy now, you've got I like Destination Truth.
Okay.
I don't care if he ever finds anything. The damn show is entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious to see these people go out and just, you know, run around in the dark with the night vision cameras, you know, screaming at shadows. It's hilarious to watch Destination Truth. And now, you know, they've started crossing that over with Ghost Hunters. And now you've got people from their other shows like Eureka and Warehouse 13 are going on, you know, with Destination Truth and going out and looking for Bigfoot.
Okay.
You know, that kind of stuff. So they're kind of tying things together. But I just, Destination Truth to me is the most entertaining show that they have. It really is. It just cracks me up every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I would like to see, you know, more streamlining and that kind of thing. And in terms of like other shows, I watched, I did watch V again this week and, you know, it's still okay.
Now it's on the bubble. There's a lot of shows that are on the bubble.
Yeah.
Chuck and Flash Forward, Heroes, V, Legend of the Seeker, all on the bubble.
Now, Flash Forward, I watched again this week and I thought that was a very good episode this week again. And it's going to be a shame if that gets canceled because it seems like that's finally getting good.
Did you like the ending? The very end of it.
I did. Yeah. And I kind of wonder about that. I don't want to talk about that because that would be kind of a big spoiler.
That's a huge spoiler.
Yeah. So I'm sort of like, is this true or is this someone playing against the other person? Mm-hmm. The way they presented it, I tend to think that's actually true, but maybe not. Maybe that's, they just want to make you think. I don't know. But I thought that was a great ending. And the last two have been the best two episodes, I think. So I'm like I said a couple of podcasts ago, maybe the last one, you know, that they were trying to position Flash Forward as it's lost.
Right.
I think if they can kind of continue on because they've been good, you know, if they remain this quality and build up a little buzz, then you never know, although it might be too late for them. It might be too little too late for them. Who knows? But it's funny. I also see on the on the show notes here that Heroes is listed.
Yes.
Boy. I watched Heroes the first season like everybody else.
Right.
And like, I thought it was the best show ever on television.
Right.
And boy, how a show got so bad.
so fast.
And I remember it was the time that I was just starting to read SF Signal and stuff when season two came out. And it was just like every week there was a post on SF Signal. And I don't know if it was DiNardo or someone else that was just like, I can't believe how bad the show is now. What happened? And I actually remember watching season two, and I kind of liked season two, if I recall.
Villains.
Yeah, but that was like when the writer's strike happened, and that really hurt it, I guess, because I remember then season three, started watching season three, and I could not. I got maybe three or four episodes into it, and I just could not continue watching it. I thought it was just awful. Like,
right.
Like it was, I can't believe a show that was so good got so bad so quickly. And I have no idea what it's like. I mean, I read all the blogs that talk about it, and most of them seem to be that it's still pretty bad. but you know, every once in a while, it seems like, yeah, this was a good episode. All right, now this one is terrible. Like so.
Well, I read something that was incredibly fascinating about Heroes, and it said that even though Heroes is on the bubble, they might make it. Because if they go one more season, you know, they've got the syndication.
Yeah, I think I read that same one.
NBC will make a bunch of money off of, and DVD sales that NBC will make a bunch of money off of. And so they might actually renew it just to get that money down the road.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, it'd be nice if they renewed it and then it actually got good. Why not just like, you know, because I don't know what their viewer numbers are, but I mean, they were
12.
Really, yeah, they were a super popular show that first season. It's like, why not just like do something where it's like, all right, the last three seasons didn't happen.
Yes.
We're starting over. Like, why not do like a real comic book thing? Like, it's supposed to be a comic book show. Why not just be like, it was a dream, or it was, we're going to go back in time. I mean, I know they already did all the time travel crap, but just start over and try to be like, remember when we were good?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going back to when it was good. Like, I think they should do that. That's, I'm just putting my two cents.
That would be hilarious. Like, Claire in bed, she's asleep. She wakes up because she hears the shower going. She turns, Siler comes out and says, what's the matter? And it was all a dream.
Yeah, I think they should totally pull a Dallas on it.
Good, you got the reference. Awesome.
I did.
No one else listening to the podcast has a clue.
Yeah, but
you know, the show that I would really like, and we haven't even talked about it once in 4 weeks because you never let me get a word in edgewise, but the show that I really wanted to talk about was Chuck.
Okay.
I love Chuck.
I like Chuck too. I've been watching it on DVD. That's a show that my wife and I actually watch, and we're about halfway through season two on DVD. So I have not watched the current season at all.
It's fabulous.
I know. I love it. I love it. I think it's just a really perfect mix of, you know, the spy stuff and some sci-fi stuff and some sort of nerdy references and humor. And I think, you know, every show, you know, the sort of like B story that is going on at the Bymore with like Morgan, and it's great. I mean, sometimes it's like, it is a little jarring in turn. I don't know what the current season's like, but it is a little jarring sometimes with how serious the sort of the A story might be and then how silly the B story may be. I mean, that's the whole point, is it's supposed to, you know, comic relief. And I mean, even in the A story with Chuck and everybody else, I mean, there's always humorous bits in the real serious stuff. But then when they go to like the stuff with, you know, Big Mike and
I love, you know, that store stuff. Yeah. I love it. It's, you know, hilarious.
We watched one episode that we watched recently was, I guess it was the Christmas episode from season two, where you know, they get held up in the Bymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I'm sure you picked up on this, but they had, as Big Mike's brother, they had the actor that was in Die Hard.
Yes.
that was also in the Urkel show, whatever, Family Matters, was that the name? Urkel show?
Yep.
But they had that actor playing that character.
Yep.
And it's supposed to be Big Mike's brother. And I thought that was so awesome. And they do a lot of references like that. Where
they,
like,
do.
And I think even like in the episode before that, I think they mentioned Nakamichi Towers or whatever the towers are in Die Hard. They referenced them there too. And I thought that was just so perfect. And they do that all the time.
Yes, like they do. Yep.
And they're quick. They're like, all right, if you're over 30, this is really funny. And if you're under 30, you don't get it. It's fine too, because we're not wasting that much time on it. But if you're over 30, you're going to think this is hilarious. And it always is. So,
well, I just gonna say they just did what would have been their last episode. But their season has been going so well that NBC ordered six more.
Mm-hmm.
Really, they just did what was their season ender, but now they get six more. And those are gonna start in 3 weeks.
That's interesting. I wonder what they're gonna do. Well, I hope that continues. I think it will, because I mean, how many new shows do they keep going? And they're already, this is the third season. So again, kind of like, and I think they, from what I've sort of read around, is that they're doing really good, not really good, but they're doing their best numbers so far.
Yes.
So, you know, why not keep that going, get it into a fourth season, and then kind of like what you were saying with Heroes, then you can kind of, you know, you get more incentive to keep it going towards the end, I guess, from a business point of view. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you definitely want those extra episodes. And like you were saying, you know, the comedy, I feel like this year the comedy has just been super amped on Chuck. I laugh my ass off every Monday. It's just, it's great. You know, and then it's kind of cool because after that I can switch it over to Big Bang Theory and watch that. But yeah, I'm hoping that they get picked up for another season because it's encouraging that they got the six extra episodes.
Yeah.
So, you know, with those six extra episodes, that means that NBC is seeing something there and hopefully, you know, I mean, hell, it's doing a lot better than Heroes. So
yeah,
they need to keep it on the air.
Yeah.
And then Fringe and Supernatural actually did get picked up. So we are going to see another season of Fringe. I know you still haven't gotten into that. You need to start getting the DVDs.
Yeah, I will, you know, because that'll be one, because my wife was a big X-Files fan, so...
She'd like it.
Yeah, my wife loves all, like, ghost stuff and supernatural kind of stuff, even though she's not into sci-fi, so I could probably get that on DVD, and she would probably be willing to watch that one, so...
Yeah, I would definitely get it. It's worthwhile.
Cool.
So, you were reading a book, and I don't know if you finished it yet or not.
I did. I just finished Spellright by Blake Charlton. I was reading it very slowly. I finally finished it. Very good. Highly recommended. Really original kind of story. Original aspects in a sort of more of a traditional kind of fantasy hero's journey kind of a deal.
Which you like. That's what you
I
like.
Do. Yeah, that's totally in my wheelhouse. And really liked it. It's probably the only criticism I have of it, even though I loved it and I gave it 4 stars on Goodreads and all that, the end is there's like a real nice sort of climactic scene, you know, 50 pages from the end. And then it's like, you know, I think this is supposed to be part of a trilogy. So it seems like the last 50 pages are, all right, and here's what we need to set up for the next book.
Right.
So the ending seemed a little rushed. It's funny because it's only 350 pages in hardcover, this book, and it seemed like it could have been longer, believe it or not. Like
oh, wow.
It seems like I almost would have liked him to spend more time, and maybe it was sort of broken up to just go into part two. And maybe if you read part, you know, the first book followed by the second and the third books right away, it'll flow real nicely. But it seemed like the ending was a little rushed to sort of set up what's going to happen in book two. But if you like sort of classic hero's journey fantasy, that's the best way that I can sort of think of it. It's a very good read. He's a great writer, very interesting, original sort of magic system. And I really loved it. So I recommend that one highly.
Awesome. Well, I'm halfway into Old Man's War.
Oh, good.
By Scalzi.
How do you like it so far?
I like it. But what's weird is I keep having like deja vu moments where I feel like I've read it before.
It's pretty – well, I what I liked about Old Man's War was I did like the humor in Old Man's War too. I really liked some of the bits with that. And I thought it was just an interesting concept for sci-fi as well. It's funny that you mentioned Old Man's War. I put on Twitter what I should read next, and I actually one of the libraries by me had a big book sale this week. You know, I don't know if your libraries do that, where they have people donate all their old books and then they sell, you know, hardcovers for $1 and paperbacks for 50 cents.
No, our libraries, when people donate their books, they have a burning.
We're a little more progressive here in New Jersey. So they sell them. But so I went on Saturday to this used book sale at the library, and I basically, you know, found all the sci-fi and fantasy stuff that I had any interest in and took it. So I got 12 books for $6.
Nice.
and it's all stuff that I would have probably bought anyway. So I did get Ghost Brigades, which is sort of the second part it's sort of the sequel to Old Man's War. And I read Old Man's War, but it's mentioned.
Yeah, it's mentioned in there when somebody dies, they say he's a candidate for the Ghost Brigade.
Yeah, and I've been meaning to pick that one up. Anytime I get one of those 30 or 40% Borders gift cards and I go and buy something, that's always like in my hand and I have picked something else every time. But so I was happy to get that. And I also picked up Tad Williams' Shadow March, which I'm leaning towards going into that one. That is a very intimidating looking book, though. It's like, I don't know, it's like 800 pages or something ridiculous.
It's been sitting on my bookshelf since it came out, specifically because of that.
Yeah. Have you read any Tad Williams before?
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes.
I only read The Flower War, and I read that quite a bit.
The Dragonbone Chair.
Yeah, that's his classic one. I have not read that one.
So the what's it? The Green Mile Road or something like that. Part one, Green Mile. Part two. That whole thing. I mean, it's massive. It's massive. It's like, you know, George R. R. Martin and Robert Jordan got together and had a little baby.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just this massive thing. I think I may have bought the first in his
Otherland. Is that
the Otherland? Yeah, I may have bought one of those. I didn't start that one yet. And when Shadow March came out, I bought that, and it's been sitting on my shelf because it is intimidating. You know what? It's a huge, big book,
mm-hmm.
and you know it's going to be really complicated, and you're going to have to really, you know, invest some time in reading it.
Yeah, and I love that. But it's like, do I want to take this on right now?
Exactly. You
know? So it's sitting here, and I have a couple of other things. I have The Risen Empire by Scott Westerfeld sitting here, and I actually picked up a copy of at the book sale at Splinter of the Mind's Eye, the old Star Wars book,
which was
like the only Star Wars novel for a long time, and the copyright date is 78. And the publication date for this particular version is like 81 or something. So I think this actually came out in between Star Wars and Empire. And I do not believe it's canon.
It's not. Yeah. And neither is the Han Solo trilogy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen that or read that.
I've seen it.
It's good. It's actually good. I have the original and then I have the reprint.
Yeah. But I know like with the with Splinter of the Mind's Eye, I think, you know, there's sort of romantic stuff going on between Luke and Leia in the book. So I just had to get it. I'm like, it's 50 cents. I have to take it. I mean, this is like a copy from 81. So that was kind of an exciting bit from the, but I picked up a lot of good stuff though.
So imagine you're the author of that book.
It's Alan Dean Foster, by the way, who wrote.
Okay. Imagine you're Alan Dean Foster and you write that book and you've got this romantic stuff between Luke and Leia. And then you see Jedi.
Mm-hmm. I got to think you're kind of mad. I don't know if there's romantic. I haven't read it yet, but I kind of think there is, you know.
Either that or he's like, oh, thank God I didn't write the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had planned on them having twins. No.
Yeah.
Well, I've been, I don't know if you noticed it on my blog, I've been doing something a little bit different. I've actually been doing books I haven't read yet.
Okay.
So it's stuff that I've bought and it's still sitting on my bookshelf.
Okay.
So when you talk about, oh, I've got this one, oh, I got, yeah, I've got a pile of books that I have not even touched yet. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get through Old Man's War because it's interesting and it, like you said, it's amusing. I keep having these flashes like I'm wondering if I'm on a lot of mailing lists. Mm-hmm. I'm on Tor's mailing list. I'm wondering if at some point they didn't like email me an excerpt.
Possible.
And I read that. And that's why I'm flashing back, you know, because the whole scene where, you know, I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
the whole scene in the doctor's office where he becomes, you know, he gets to be young. I feel like I've read it before. So I'm thinking that they sent an excerpt out. They did something at some point to market that book. And I got it somewhere. So it's like, I'm sitting there reading. I'm like, I know I've read this before. And I even kind of went to my bookshelf and I'm looking, I'm going, do I already own this book? Is it already on the shelf somewhere?
Yeah.
And it's not. So, but it's good. I'm liking it.
Yeah.
So, and then did you see that he's rebooting somebody else's book?
I did see that. Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting.
And weird.
Yeah. Weird, I guess. Weird one. But, you know, hey, whatever. It's cool.
Okay. We talked a lot about music today, but are you listening to anything in particular right now that you want to tell people about, or?
You know what? I'm kind of at this juncture where I have a bunch of different things. I'm not really obsessive about one album this week. I have like, you know, a lot of different stuff up there, so I could save some music discussion for next time.
Okay. Well, yeah. I just want to throw out real quick, you know, last week we were going to talk about something and I kind of kiboshed it. I like clean music. Yeah, I like instruments that don't have a lot of distortion on them. You know, I like acoustic music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I like music that people can, you know, they can sit down, they can in front of an instrument and they can recreate it without having to have a computer nearby, for example. I know that that's not necessarily you. But that's kind of what I like.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's it is me. It's not how I go about recording my stuff all the time, but when I play live, I sit and play and I like redo things to be able to sit and play it.
Gotcha.
You know, in one shot. But anyway, I know you're saying, why don't you finish your point then?
No, that's fine.
Dare you? How dare you accuse? No, I know your point is.
Well, it's kind of funny because my cousin Steve, he's a fantastic guitar player. If he has an electric guitar with an amplifier and a pedal.
Uh-huh. I gotcha.
And, you know, he has to blast it as loud as possible and he has to have a bunch of distortion on it. And, you know, I'm just sitting there with my fingers in my ear going, my God, you're killing me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'll pick up my acoustic guitar and play things. And like I said, he's a fantastic guitar player. He's a great lead guitar player. Hand him an acoustic guitar and he can't play.
Well, I think
he struggles. He struggles. Yeah,
I think with that, it's, I think when you're playing an acoustic and when you're playing an electric, I think it's almost like playing different instruments. And if you give someone who's primarily an acoustic player a Les Paul cranked up, you know, they wouldn't have the skills to mute it correctly, like to control it, you know? So I do think it's almost like, you know, playing a different instrument. But I do hear what you're saying with that, because with an acoustic, you really have to, there's a certain style of playing that if you only play electric and then if you play like what you do on an electric on an acoustic, it sounds terrible.
Different,
it's just
yeah.
thin and nothing's going on, you know?
Well, and I also think that an electric guitar is less forgiving of mistakes than an acoustic.
You think an electric is less forgiving, or do you think?
I do. I think you can hear it a lot easier on an electric guitar than you can on an acoustic.
Sure, sure.
So the reason I bring all this up is because Stephen Stills has an album called Stills Alone. And it's been out for a really long time. But we talked earlier about how people try to get me to listen to things and I kind of say, screw you.
Mm.
This was given to me a really long time ago. And it's only recently that I started listening to it and actually paying attention to it and realizing that I liked it.
Okay.
And it's exactly Stills Alone, so it's him playing by himself. Normally, you know, if you know Stephen Stills, you
sure.
probably think Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is just him and a guitar, and he's got something going on the guitar, but not like heavy distortion. He's definitely got it like going through an amplifier or something. So it's an electric guitar, but it almost sounds like it's an acoustic electric.
Okay,
and he's just playing all these songs, and it's very clean. It's one of those deals where when someone is really, really good, they make it sound so basic, but you know it's not.
Right, sure, sure.
And that's what I get from Stills Alone.
Cool.
And I mean, he's covering a lot of songs. You know, he plays a couple of his own songs. He plays like a Beatles song. There's a lot of different things on the album. But I didn't give it a shot, and I kind of regret that now because I could have been listening to it for a really long time and enjoying it instead of just finding it now.
Cool. Well, I'll have to check that out because I haven't listened to a lot of Stills, so I'd be curious to check that one out.
I definitely recommend it, Stills Alone.
Sounds good.
All right, so we've been talking for a little over an hour now. We probably have talked about everything. Unless you got something extra.
No, nope. I think that's a good place to wrap it up for the week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
All right. Well, I will pimp my stuff first. The Twitter feed is twitter.com/JohnAnealio, J-O-H-N-A-N-E-A-L-I-O. I forgot how to spell my name for a minute.
Okay, what's in the glass? I keep hearing the glass tinkling there. Now just, you can't remember how to spell your name.
It's water. You notice. I mean, you complained about me being loud. If I was drinking something other than water, I would get really loud. Anyway, so that's the Twitter feed. My blog is scifisongs.blogspot.com. Lots of free music there. And you can find my sci-fi song album on CD Baby, on Amazon, on iTunes. I think it's actually, because we were talking about all this stuff, I think it's on Rhapsody and La La, and it's supposed to be on everything. Like, I've had the CD Baby thing of just put it on everything. So it'll eventually get to everything, but it's not on everything. But it is on iTunes and it is on Amazon. So throw my name or Sci-Fi Songs and you can find it there.
Awesome. That's cool. Of course, I'm out there on Twitter, twitter.com/ATFMB, which stands for All Things From My Brain. I also have the blog. That's the same thing, atfmb.com, All Things From My Brain. And I have the serial fiction Evermist, atfmb.com/Evermist with a capital E. And we have functionalnerds.com. And you should check out functionalnerds.com because I am sitting there every day at lunch and putting out some news roundups, calling them nerd news roundups. And it's all kinds of stuff that I'm finding all over the web that might be interesting to you. And so you should check it out. Right?
Very good. I've been checking them out. I've been enjoying them. So there you go.
Good. Awesome. Well, next week will be episode 6, and we'll see if John will do it completely drunk.
All right. I'll do my best. I'll do my best with that.
All right. I think we're done. So we'll see you next time. Bye.
All right. Bye.